What's up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I'm super excited because it's a big week coming up. Big week coming up here in New York, March 5th through 7th. The International Restaurant and Food Service Show here in New York. So if you guys are going to be there starting this Sunday through Tuesday, I was going to say through Monday, but through Tuesday, I will be there Sunday and Monday. So if you guys are going to be around, hit me up. Let me know. I'd love to connect with you guys, do some content, just kind of say what's up. And maybe walk the show. Maybe we do a little bit of, like a live recorded podcast from the show floor. That would be pretty cool. So that is this week at the Jacob Javits Convention Center. DM me over on Instagram if you guys are going. And we'll see what it's all about. These shows are always great to kind of attend. Just get an update what's going on technology-wise, equipment-wise, food service-wise. There's all sorts of innovation happening. So important to attend these things. And I'm not associated with them anyway. I just think this is a great thing, and it's in New York, so I gotta go. But before then, we got a guest, super special guest. This is his second appearance on the show, and I always love his perspective because he's coming from outside the restaurant industry and built a tremendous fast casual concept called the Balance Grill, and it is super tech forward. He has a insane amount of knowledge when it comes to the technology required to execute a concept like this across multiple units. So I think his perspective is super important. Now, his name is Prakash. His last name is Kara McChumdani. I think I did that right, okay? But if not, please, Prakash, forgive me. I try my best here. You know, I always struggle with this, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I think he's one of the coolest restaurant owners that I've spoken to, and his, like I said, his unique perspective on the industry and where he's taking this concept in terms of technology, in terms of food offerings, constantly adapting and evolving the concept, I think is super important. It's something you guys should pay attention to. So get your pad and paper out and listen to my man Prakash, CEO and co-founder of the Balance Grill.
Order up. Look, I'm a big believer that experience teaches. My goal with this show is to have guests to share their experience so that they can tell you what it's like, what they did right, and what they did wrong. And I'm going to share the same. Look, I'm not trying to regurgitate stuff you can find on the internet. I'm going to tell you how it really is and what it's really like to own your own place.
This is the National Restaurant Owners Podcast with your host, Kyle and Sarah.
When I had my first restaurant, one of the biggest challenges I had was attempting to grow the business while running the existing units. If this sounds like you, don't you wish you had an expert to help guide you and navigate the challenges you face? Well, Four Turns is here to help. They're the nationwide restaurant growth advisory firm. They know the restaurant industry because they've owned and operated their own establishments. They've worked with restaurants of all shapes and sizes, from independent mom and pops to fast casual chains to bars to nightclubs and fine dining establishments. Our team of experienced consultants can help you with everything from marketing and branding to operations and financial planning. And unlike a lot of other consultants that maybe you spoke to before, this is not a one-size-fits-all solution. We're not just dropping spreadsheets and videos on you that we think works for everybody. That's not the case. Instead, we take the time to understand your unique challenges and goals and then tailor our approach to meet your needs. We're sitting side by side with you at the conference table, maybe on a Zoom or Microsoft meetings, but you know what I mean. We're right there with you. We will provide the support and expertise you need to take your business to the next level. Now, for some of you, next level could be just, you know, fix the existing operations of the current unit. For some of you, it may be growing to 100 units. Either way, we're going to ride shotgun with you in the car to make it happen. So if you're ready to take the next step, why don't you jump on a free call? Click the link in my bio over on Instagram or in the bottom of the show notes and schedule a free call. And we will just figure it out together, figure out what your needs are. And look, our goal is not to have these one-off consulting jobs. Our goal is to help you get to where you want to go. So like I said, if it's just improve your existing operations or to grow to multiple units or start to franchise or say, hey, we want to build to 10 units and sell this thing, that's what we're going to help you do. So click the link in the show notes, head over to Instagram, click the link in my bio, and set up your free call today. All right, Prakash, welcome back, buddy. How are you? How are things going?
Really well. Things are great, man. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be back on the podcast. I'm a fan. I listen to your to your awesome episodes every time they come out. So
That's great. That's a first, I think, actually. I don't think I've ever had that, so I appreciate that, man. I mean, you were on over a year ago, right? Was it?
Yeah, it's been over a year. It was a little bit after things in COVID were like starting to settle out a little bit.
Yeah.
And we had a great conversation then, super
That
relevant.
was, yeah, and there's so much that you've gotten into since then. And I mean, you're just, you came into this from a different, you weren't, didn't mean to be a restaurateur, right? So like you have that
Yeah, I'm
outside
not a
experience,
restaurant
right?
guy.
That's nah, yeah, try not saying that now. But yeah, like so I love your perspective, but give us a quick update on where you guys are at with balance.
Yeah, for sure, man. So we made our pivots. We navigated COVID like so many people did and found our niche again, found that passion again, which I think was probably my favorite part. To get through COVID, me and my business partner, we just jumped back in and every layer of operations went through, reworked the whole thing, rebranded the whole thing. I mean, there's no area of our business that was left untouched. And by the end of it, now we're performing better than we were pre-COVID on a whole bunch of different levels, which is great. And then we brought on some strategic partners to help us franchise and grow our concept. So that's been
So
really exciting.
you weren't just like sitting on your ass writing this out. You actually did something with your time, which is like, I mean, that's when you had the time, right? Otherwise, to put all those pieces, a branding project, bring on a new partner, like while you're trying to run the business, it could take a significant amount of time, but you had some downtime.
Yeah, I think COVID gave us a little downtime. I think it took the stress off of trying to grow a little bit. I think we're so preoccupied with how to grow, what's the next step. And it's so consuming. I mean, it lives rent-free in your mind, you know? And then when you take that away and say, okay, well, nobody's really growing right now. What can we do? Let's grow internally. Let's make ourselves better and find every single process. And how do we make it easier for ourselves so it can be easier for the next person?
What is it like now being a multi-unit operator? I mean, that's not easy to step into. How has that been for you to tackle this?
I mean, it's got its challenges, but also I think in a lot of ways things become easier because you learn how to build a strong team, and then there's a lot of love in that. There's a lot of just like trust, and you get to watch people develop, and you develop people, and it's a people organization. It's a people business, you know?
I mean, I was talking to, I'm talking to people all the time, and their thing is like, struggling to find people, right? They're trying to find good people. And I feel like we're almost out of that. Like, I feel like that conversation's kind of ending. The good groups, like you guys, have started to figure out what's important and what to offer people. Are you still dealing with any like, super difficult labor challenges, or you've kind of settled back into like a pre-COVID situation?
I'm gonna be honest with you, man. We kind of missed that. We didn't have any
Yes.
labor challenges. I mean, things were good. Our system's a lot different though.
Yeah.
So, and we've always paid kind of above market. We compete with Amazon, we compete with Costco, we compete with, a lot of outside of just the restaurant industry,
Yeah.
kind of entry level positions and offer all the benefits and stuff like that. So it's helped us out with retainment. And attraction of talent. I mean, there's some natural turnover you're always going to have. People's life
Yeah.
situations change. But it's been really low.
Are
Our
you?
average,
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, our average tenure right now is running at 2.4 years. So
That's
most
great.
people stick around for a while.
Are you, when you talk about, your business and it's a little bit different, I know that you're coming from the tech space. You guys were ahead of the curve with the online stuff, and you guys were calling it like a digital drive-through, I think, or something along those
Yeah.
lines at the time. Tell us, I mean, that was obviously weren't planning that to be, you were kind of ahead of the curve there. I mean, have you made any advances beyond that now? I mean, what does your tech stack look like now? I mean, seems silly to ask
Yeah.
you because you're a tech guy, but
No, I mean it's a great question. And the answer to this could change a year from now, so I'll preface that,
Yeah.
but we still heavily focus on our mobile app. It still accounts for about 80% of our revenue, so we're heavy into
Wow.
digital. Doing a lot with marketing and have done a lot of improvements with our app. We rebuilt out our entire customer support system in the app and created like a whole ticketing system with that to help with customer retainment, and then have created sequential marketing campaigns, so it pushes people from one campaign to the next,
Wow.
which is killer. Heavy into personalization. of app campaigns and marketing, and then have done a lot more with linking our social media posts to the app, so it drives sales. You can kind of bypass the whole pixel issue that's happening just by driving people into the app. So been busy on that. We've got some middleware for third-party delivery. You've got the POS in the middle of it all, which really just does reporting. And then I've got a piece of software for each one of my major P&L line items. So scheduling, just super important, and then inventory, and then those link back. Scheduling goes all the way through from creating the schedule to managing requests, availability requests, time off requests, swap requests, all that kind of stuff, tasks, and automating all of that, the reporting of it. And then we tie the scheduling system into two other systems that are directly integrated, our payroll and our LMS for training. And then on the food cost side of things, that's directly integrated with our accounting. So it keeps not only like in-store operations really streamlined, but the administration part of it really streamlined.
That's amazing. So when you say the reports are automated, they're just like they're running, they're taking in the sales, they're taking in the labor. Are they also somehow taking in the invoices? Everything is all coming together into one
Yeah.
report emailed out to managers, or how exactly does that work?
So we have a list of right now that's when I said earlier things may change. I think one of the things that you see happening now is kind of a resurgence in demand for an all-in-one system. And I don't think POS vendors are ever going to get there. We got to where we're at right now because we want to use best-in-class software for each tool that we're using. But getting them all to report together is something that we're working on building. Which is like a business intelligence dashboard so that there is like a live and active dashboard. But right now it takes, I don't know, 5, 7 minutes, and we check the same few reports for each store and take a look at it, and that's pretty much it.
So you can look at your sort of like makeshift dashboard, like you're saying. So you have everything on the same sort of, you can compare apples to apples and see what everything looks like from unit to unit, see what they all, how they're all performing. That's great. I mean, that's,
Yeah.
I mean, are you guys listening? Are you guys listening to this? I mean, you and you're not, I mean, this is something, I mean, you're a tech guy, but it can be done, right? This is not something that's, it takes a lot of work, certainly takes a lot, maybe a different understanding than running a restaurant, but the technology exists.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does exist. But I think the secret is not in like integrations or even software selection. It's something you said on your last podcast, which is operationally, how do you implement it? And just making sure that it's woven into all of your processes, all of your training. That's what makes it work. If you implement these software systems and people don't use them, then there's no value.
Yeah,
It
that's I was
seems obvious, but.
yeah. I mean, I was talking to somebody like, they're talking about implementing technology. Like, I'm spending $1,000 a month to save like 1,200.
Yeah, it's rough.
But that's a user error, I think, right? Like, you're probably not. I know my brother-in-law works in customer success. He used to work at Google, and now he works for this other, I don't know what tech company. But there's a lot to that where like you get set up to these platforms, and there's so many tech companies, and they're like, all right, you're good to go. And then maybe you're not using all the functionality, you're not reading it right. I mean, how much of that tech stuff is that like user error? I mean, is it because I feel like some people just plug it in and expect it to be magic.
It's a lot of user error. I think the best thing is, and what we've done is we make sure that we have an expert in our team for each one of these software platforms, whoever it may be. And they're the primary point of contact directly with that vendor. And then depending on the vendor and the degree to which they change their system or we have a project, it might be a biweekly check-in or a weekly check-in, even if it's just a half an hour, just to make sure that they're aware of how we use their system and they hear our feedback on features that we want. So if you can get your tech vendor, however you want to say that, your tech partner, to agree to do that with you, I think it's super important.
So talk to me about the app, because that's a conversation I've had a couple times about like, the real estate on this thing being almost as important as the real estate on the planet. Like the people that are going to be vying for that how much space is going to take up on their phone. How did you guys go about, not, I hate to say forcing, but getting your guests to download that to the degree where it's 80% of your revenue?
So we got it to 50% pre-COVID. So 80% sounds like huge, but it's not like we went to that immediately. It was definitely a building process. When we didn't have a custom app, we hovered in that like 12 to 20% range, pretty usual. And then once we were able to customize the front end of it and what customers download and completely brand it and really fine-tune that menu viewing, the ordering experience, the feedback experience, implement all of that, we were able to get it up to 50%. And the cheat code in that, for us at least, is we've never really run any discounts or any coupons or anything like that. And so when we launched a loyalty program and it made ordering faster, it was kind of a no-brainer for customers.
I mean, and you guys, like you said, you were ahead of it anyway. So when you transitioned, they were just like, oh, this is a bonus. Now I just have the app here on my phone. Whereas a lot of folks were now they're, there's a lot of third-party providers skinning like different apps, we brought in the logos on top of there. Do you think that would you do the app again, or would you force? I mean, would you do something else? I mean, obviously, that's a kind of silly question because it worked out for you so well. But the average person, how should they get started in this app game? Maybe that's a better question.
I think the first thing is to find out if your concept is well suited for it. So you said earlier, real estate on the phone. The only reason people keep our app on their phone is because of the type of restaurant that we are. We're kind of a lifestyle brand. And I know that's a super trendy word, but I mean, we have our average visit rate is twice a week. So that means customers are visiting quite often. We're not really doing culinary magic. I mean, you've seen our menu, Kyle, but if somebody hasn't, it's just balance.menu, or you can visit our website at balancegrill.com. And you'll see, I mean, it's bowls, it's tacos, it's snacks, but everything you look at on there, it's something theoretically you could just make at home. I mean, what makes it special is our sauces and the fact that we can do it faster and with less ecological offset, and it's cheap enough to do multiple times a week. So people just fit it in their lifestyle. If you were doing, a really bomb smash burger or birria tacos or something like that, that's your standout thing, chicken and waffles. People don't eat that twice a week. So the likelihood of them downloading an app for a brand like that is pretty low.
It's a good point. It's a great point, actually. Especially, I mean, you guys are, it's healthier food. Like it's trends to be that more that way more. I mean, I noticed you guys redid the website. It looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
That's a good point. Like I never thought of it that way. Like if you're like an indulgent item, I don't need to download the app because I'm gonna get it. Like I'm fiending for it. I'm gonna do whatever I have to do to get that thing. I don't need the app. But if I'm regularly using it, like Starbucks, right? Like people love that. Then it's great. I have it in here. You save the order, press it. I mean, Starbucks now has that like Siri thing where you just be like, yeah, Siri, order my Starbucks thing, which I love. But some people get bugged out about it. But what do you think about this whole AI thing that's happening right now?
You were gonna go there. You were
I mean,
gonna
you're
go
the
to
guy I have to ask. If I
ChatGPT.
bring it up to any other restaurant owner, they're gonna look at me like I have seven heads.
Oh man, it's what's in right now, and it's pretty wild. I mean, the things that you can do with it are crazy. And we're using it right now to draft social content and the notifications that go out, because I mentioned earlier, like personalized campaigns, but a lot of people like run one or two campaigns. Like any given month, we're running like 70 campaigns. So to sit down and write out the copy for that and all the, we have to send out three push notifications for each campaign, it's a ton of copy work. I mean, so it's a lot of heavy lifting. So using ChatGPT to do that and create different variants is definitely there. There's a bunch of other AI that's specific for copy, which I think is pretty cool. There's stuff that's out there for doing graphical overlays on content that's even easier than kind of drag and drop. And the ability to, especially what's hot right now in all types of campaigns, whether you're doing social or just regular digital ads, Hulu or YouTube or whatever you're doing through your app is A/B testing, which means you have to create all that copy and content twice, which is even more work. So I'm personally happy to see AI come out because I don't have time for that.
I've been messing with it quite a bit, and it's I had it like just I wrote create a brunch menu for me for a Mexican restaurant. But 2 minutes, right? Like, but from the copywriting standpoint, you're right. It's not perfect, but if you don't like to write, it gets you 90, 95% of the way there, and you just get your brain going a little bit. I mean, it's wild to think that this is like the worst it's gonna be, right? It's only gonna get better from here. What we don't know about. But do you see it being something that like you implement regularly into your business, or where do you see it being implemented in restaurants in
AI.
general?
I think right now, so on your last podcast, I hate to keep referencing this, but if you haven't heard it,
No,
go back and
please
listen
do.
to it,
I
because
didn't
I
know.
just heard it. And you were talking about dedicating time when you implement a pieces of your tech stack to reviewing the reports. And I think where AI is going to go is you're going to be able to plug it into all these different data sources, and it'll be like, hey, tell me how my restaurant did yesterday. And it's going to be like, Sylvania, Ohio did X, 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 and X, which is up this much, and this was your payroll cost. And it's just going to give you your morning report. And I think that's where AI in the restaurant industry is definitely going to go. Business intelligence dashboards are a thing of the past because nobody wants to sit there and just look at it. So I think we'll get there. I think it'll be big into marketing, like we touched on before. And I think it's going to, and you already see this, but automating different forms of order entry on behalf of customers. So talking to customers, allowing customers to just text their order and they respond conversationally or respond through like an auto attendant, like thanks for calling Balance Grill. Have you seen our menu? Do you want to place an order? Awesome. Our most popular menu item is the Wiseman Bowl. And then it'll walk through it, ask you if you want any modifiers, and basically take your order conversationally. They're definitely, I haven't seen a good one yet, but if you see one, Kyle, definitely send it to me. All of them
Like
sound pretty
a
corny, and I
responsive
don't
AI, you
know
mean?
any.
Yeah, that's, I mean, to me, my buddy Sean Walchef, I don't know if you know him, he's got the digital hospitality and restaurant influencers podcast, and he's called it Digital Hospitality. And it's like, you gotta, it's not like taking jobs away, it's not diminishing hospitality. I think it's meeting people where they want to be met and having the conversation digitally, because I have a 15-year-old daughter, and if she has a friend, like if she sends her a message like, hey, what are you doing tonight? And the girl leaves her on read for like 3 minutes,
That's
that's
pretty
hurtful.
offensive.
Yeah, they don't, yeah. So like those, yeah, exactly, right? And so like those digital connections are real. And if you can be more responsive with AI, and like what if they can even say like, hey, Kyle, the last 5 times you ordered this bowl and these tacos and this bubble tea, do you want that again? I think that's amazing hospitality. I don't know what's the problem is with that. I don't know why people are getting upset. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people get really touchy about incorporating tech into the hospitality sector, but ultimately, what do you define customer service as? Me personally, it's the ability to anticipate a customer's needs
For
in
sure.
its most simple form. And if technology can help you do that, so that your staff can be better utilized and can provide an even higher level of service rather than being stuck with the mundane task like punching things into a POS. Like all of our stores are kiosk only now or app only. So there isn't even a way to converse with somebody. There's nobody being paid to stand behind a POS and just push buttons.
There's a guy, Stratus Morfogan. I don't know if you know him, Brooklyn Dumpling Shop. It's kind of, he's all over the place. He's got a lot of he has a lot of things to say about a lot of different things. Very outspoken gentleman, but he has the Brooklyn Dumpling Shop where you scan your code, you place the order, then you just go up, you scan the code, and then the lockers open up for the heated
Yeah.
items at the top. So like he was saying that POSs are, I mean, he takes very hardline stances. He's like, POSs are done. We don't need the POSs anymore. Everybody's POS is their phone. What do you think about that? Is that gonna happen, you think?
Think it depends on what you define a POS as, right? Like so many people look at it as this all-in-one thing. Like this is the software that's going to run my business. A POS is just the register and reporting component. It is the booking of sales. And if you look at it like that, then there's a number of different front ends that can accept the order. It could be done manually, it could be done automatically, it could be done through a third party. It doesn't really matter. It's all coming, but all the orders are coming back to a central point. That's where your sales are being booked. That's where your reporting is being done. That's where all of your product mix is existing. Your menu exists. So as long as you have that single source of truth for that, I don't think POS will ever be done. I think the age of POS being your all-in-one platform that takes your orders, reports your sales, schedules your employees, and manages your inventory. I mean, that's been done for 5 years.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah, and now I just think people are starting to put it all together, because I remember it used to be, you had to have this platform that didn't talk to that platform. To your point earlier, it's all starting to come together. And I think Oh yeah, I really think if it enhances the guest experience, and some guy was saying to me on LinkedIn the other day or Twitter, I can't even keep them straight anymore, but he was like, I don't even care. I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to get my food and get out. Like there are
And
some
get out,
places,
yeah.
yeah, like I'm sure most of your folks are coming in, grabbing their bowl, going back to the office or sitting down with their friends, talking. Not necessarily the kind of place where they're bantering with the bartender or discussing the specials with the maitre
Yeah.
d'. It's just a different, it's just different. It's not better or worse, it's just different. For some people it is better.
Absolutely. Again, it goes back to what kind of concept are you? For
Yeah.
us, we're an 80% offsite concept.
That's
So
it.
only 20% of people are even dining in. And most people are like this couple right behind me, just walking in, grabbing their food and walking right out. They don't even
Yeah.
want to speak to somebody. I mean,
Yeah.
somebody said hi, they acknowledged them with just a small wave. They looked at a couple of bags, they picked up their bag and they left.
Yeah.
They don't want to have a conversation, but they also look like they were dressed in gym clothes, so they might be a little sweaty and just want to
Yeah,
get in
like
and
a
out, you
couple
know what I mean?
hours. But that's just it. I mean, I think all these things, actually, I'm curious about your opinion on these ghost kitchens. What are your
Yeah,
thoughts on
kind
them?
of.
Have you guys thought about those in terms of like, I like them for expansion models. I think there's tremendous opportunity for, depending on the brand. Have you considered anything in that space?
We haven't. It's not like I would be closed off to it. I think it's definitely interesting. I mean, for us, we want to take down a great real estate, suburban sites, corners, and that's expensive. So I want to push as much volume through my kitchen as possible.
Right.
If you're doing other menus that are delivery only and you want to offsite that because your facility isn't built for the volume, then that's a great way to not maybe build a whole nother location or worry about the real estate, and you could just transfer your delivery business over there and make more efficient use out of your existing kitchen. I think if you're just starting up and you're creating a virtual brand, it's a great competitor to even buying a food truck. You don't have to worry about the scheduling, you don't have to do any of
None of
that.
that. Yep.
I think it's got a good niche, and it's kind of the same thing with food hall. The most
Yeah.
recent location we opened in Denver is in a food hall, and it's awesome, but I think there's certain types of concepts that really thrive in there.
How did you adapt your concept for the food hall, if at all?
Well, they were looking for an anchor. So as far as adaption, they put a full kitchen in because they wanted a takeout component. Like I said, we do 80% takeout. So we got a full-blown kitchen, which is dope. We don't have like a little kiosk. What we did do though is separate off our bubble tea, which we serve bubble tea, and we broke that out and put its own a counter in separate from our kitchen. So
Oh,
it kind
cool.
of looks like two different concepts, but they got a two for one deal. So
Ah, nice. So how big is
yeah.
that space?
The total food hall or our space
No,
within
in
it?
your space.
Our kitchen is normally like 680 square feet. And like I said, we put the full kitchen in there, and then you got about
Wow.
100 square feet for the tea bar. So we didn't like compromise. We just
Yeah.
basically deleted our dining room, deleted our bathrooms, and moved the two blocks around.
Nice. Yeah, I mean I think it's interesting. There's a couple of them going up around here, like the food halls in particular, but then they're like building on the back end, ghost kitchen stuff. So you can be front facing serving your guests, and out the back, people are, Uber Eats, all these guys are picking up out of the back, either the same concept or a different concept. I know you're strictly focused, but has all this tech and like ghost kitchens, virtual brands made you think of any other concepts that are like I could crush it with this, or you don't want to tell anybody?
I want to stay like laser focused, man.
Yeah,
I
smart.
found one great niche. I think, pre-COVID, we had opened up some sites in suburban sites. We opened up a couple of downtown sites. And I think that's one of the blessings out of COVID is it has been difficult at downtown sites, but we definitely found our niche in these suburban sites, and we know exactly what works. So my focus is just making sure that we continue to grow within that real estate model, and then we can get back to switching our business model a little bit later. But it is a business model, and
Yeah.
once you find something that works and you're lucky enough to do that,
Yeah.
my preference is a little more conservative and just stick to what you know and hammer it home, keep getting
No,
better.
that's I have it here. You can't see it, but somebody told me when I was in the restaurant business, they're like, you're better to be Mariano Rivera. Like, come with the one thing. Once you figure out the one thing that works, you know, just come with it. You know, fastball every single time. Everybody knew what was coming. Nobody could touch it. Succeeded like 5 World Series. Like, that's what works. I'm sure he could have picked up a cutter or a changeup along the, I mean, a cutter. He didn't have a cutter. A changeup or a curveball along the way. But he just was like, you know, this is what works. I'm going to stick with it. Rather than, like, I talked to so many operators and they're like, I'm going to do a ghost kitchen. I'm doing Gold Belly. I'm doing this. And I'm like, how the hell are you, A, making money, B, sane, you know, sleep, like any of this stuff. I'm with you, man. Keep it simple. Once you know what you have, like, let it rip. Like, everything right at that. So talk to me about real estate. You mentioned that you guys are franchising. You're looking at different pieces. Yeah. I mean, how are you tackling that? I mean, it's a lot to go from being independent restaurants to I got my arms around this to now like letting other people take control. What has that experience been like?
Yeah, it's wild, man. I'll definitely say that. It's pretty crazy. Luckily we brought on some strategic partners. So I'll preface this by saying I only know what I know. My specialty is like marketing, tech, some of the administrative background stuff. My business partner, who you haven't had on your podcast yet, but you totally should, because he would probably resonate a lot with your usual listener base, which are like a lot of creatives, a lot of chefs, things like mm-hmm. that. I don't think like that. I don't have any restaurant skills. I'm not culinarily talented. That is all true. CJ. He creates the menu, and he's super creative, and he's just like what you just described. He wants to be everywhere all at once. He wants to do. You know, one day he'll call me up at 2 a.m. and be like, I want to start selling kimchi online. And I'm like, no. Dude,
who is this?
Stay focused. Yeah, stay focused. New phone. Who dis? just kind of speaking of ghost kitchens, it just ghost him sometimes. We needed some partners to be able to execute franchising, because franchising is a whole different business. It is nothing like running a restaurant. And so luckily we partnered with these guys, Pivotal Growth Partners. They're kind of based here in the Midwest. They've helped a couple other brands scale, develop everything that you need for franchising. And so we partnered with them at the beginning of 22. We already opened our first franchise store. We've got other stuff already happening. Leases getting signed.
Oh, wow.
Stuff in motion. So
are you? Go ahead. Sorry. So many questions. Yeah.
No, it's cool. I know. There's a lot we could go from here, but overall, it's been great. I mean, to answer your initial question on what it's like to let go, I don't feel like I really am. So who we're partnering with is not kind of mom and pops or just kind of fans of the brand. We're partnering with people who are, you know, serious about operations. They already got franchises in at least one brand, multiple locations. So they're kind of on the sophisticated end, and they know how franchising works. They know what to expect from a franchisor. They play their part. They play it really well, and they expect us to do the same. So it's like bringing on a sophisticated COO for each market, which is great. A value-added investor in their own way.
Now, in that, how much work did it take? I mean, I would imagine, I don't know, maybe you had to shift how things were working, but like supply chain. Yeah. Like you have things that you use that are, I mean, a lot of restaurant operators know, like, I only get my straws from this guy. Or, I mean, how did you go about that process? Were you already pretty well set up, or did you kind of have to change things around and reposition?
We were semi set up, I would say. So we already had a master distribution agreement to service our stores. Mm-hmm. And in that agreement, we had a certain number of non-proprietary items, proprietary items, and what are called like soft proprietary items, or something that a distributor will bring in and be able to sell to somebody else. And so we kind of went through every single one of our SKUs, figured out where we source it from, worked with their purchasing department, make sure that they slot it. We still have somebody on our team who manages the inventory remotely, assists with purchasing when necessary. So it's a lot of work. And then luckily they're super regional. So they have a number of different warehouses, but they also work with other warehouses. So we kind of branch in on kind of a national contract, and they supply other vendors with all of our proprietary items.
So
it's complicated and really challenging.
No, does that determine how far you're willing to go? Like, I mean, you said Denver, that's a fair ride from where you're at. Like, does it mean you can't go to Boston? Like, we just can't get there yet. We have to build that out. Like,
it does. So it does limit your potential growth. And then other things that limit your growth are availability of real estate, certain economic conditions that go state by state, where we feel the brand would really do well. And overall, we want to be in certain regional taste profiles that maximize our company valuation, which is why we're targeting those specific markets to go into and only finding the right operator for that specific market.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? Because you have like these discovery days, right? Like for you guys who don't know, it's like he puts out there, you know, Balance will put out there saying like, hey, we have this franchise opportunity. Come check us out. You're interested. They go to one of your stores, right? And say, oh, wow, I really love this. But now you have to love them and that's to make that work. I mean, what is that? That's a tough process, right? Like, I mean, because they're there and they have the money, but that's not always the piece. And like you said, these partnerships are valuable as you grow. What has that whole process been like, filtering through the applications, the discovery days? I mean, this really is a whole other layer to your business.
It's a whole other thing. And that's where I go back to saying, I'm really glad I brought in strategic partners because they handled that whole process. They let me know when there's going to be discovery day, just the unique nature of how we're doing franchising. They're all one-on-one. We've had multiple phone and Zoom conversations with them. They've already gotten a lot more information than what would go out to a traditional person for discovery day. And then we bring them in. We have kind of a tour process, and I'm talking about this like I really know what I'm doing, but we've only done four so far.
Nobody knows.
They've worked out really well. So luckily there's a lot of pre-screening. There's a lot of information we send them beforehand. And then they do come in for discovery day. They get a little look behind the scenes. They get to meet us, spend time with us. It's a couple of days. So we get a really good sense of the vibe, which is super important because I think that's, you know, you said money, operational chops. I mean, those two are like 50% of the equation. The other 50% of the equation is, do we vibe? You know, do we work the same way? Do we grind the same way? Do we approach problems the same way? Are you the type of person that I wouldn't mind getting a text from at, you know, 2 o'clock on a Sunday? And am I going to regret getting into this multi-year arrangement with this person, right? And that's the same thing they're looking for to an extent, because by that time they've already vetted it financially. They've already made sure it makes sense with what their goals are in getting into a new franchise. And really they're just coming to put that final stick of approval on it.
Yeah. That's great, man. I mean, you certainly have been busy. I mean, that having the franchise partner handling that stuff, because they like the paperwork alone is
it's unreal.
Unreal, right? And that's a state by state thing, right? So like that's a hefty lift. So you guys don't understand. You have to register yourself. You can stop me because I know about like 65%. Like you have to register state by state, right? Like saying, hey, we're gonna be a franchise, we're gonna be selling franchises in this state. And then you have to wait, because now I know there's like I've been in situations where the franchisor is driving us to find sites for a franchisee, but their paperwork is still pending. So they can look, but they can't sign leases. And sometimes that gets in the way. So there's a lot of moving parts there. And sometimes waiting for those states to turn things around, and there's attorneys, which always adds another layer. It's but once it gets going, I mean, it's a pretty incredible system.
It is. Yeah. And it's kind of the nationally recognized way of how to partner with people and spread a brand. So it makes a lot of sense. Franchising stuff, bringing in experts who know what they're doing, super important. So they come with all of the chops from, they're not lawyers, but they have lawyers that they've worked with before. They know what's needed in order to generate an FDD, an FA, franchise development agreement, all of these critical components, deliverables, how to maintain them. But then also how to distribute them through the sales process. Mm. They have an entire process for vetting. They've got, real estate analysis so that when we do work with a local broker, they know exactly what we're looking from a demographic standpoint.
Yeah.
Construction management, it's a lot. It's end to end. I mean, these guys pretty much just hand us stores ready to open. So
that's great, because I've been involved with some franchise groups where it's like, okay, let me get your 50 grand or whatever the fee is. You know, fill out all your stuff. We agree, love each other. And then let us know when you find a site. We'll approve it. And, you know, a lot of times these folks, depending, like we've alluded to several times, they either have somebody they work with, or they just have the chops and go out and execute on the site stuff. Or they have like their aunt who works at Remax and is helping them, and it just becomes like a mess. So it's great to hear. I mean, That's an added value. I think franchisees are looking for that. That's are that type of, a lot of them are for that type of help. I just think, like, if I'm you, my thought is like, shit, like, these people are going to be lying on me. Is that something that like you think about now? Like, if all these franchisees are like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it weighs on every single decision, but it's also super validating that they buy into your brand. They buy into you. And they're great relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys that we've got on board, I mean, like I said, I text them all the time. They text me all the time. It's gets incorporated into your lifestyle.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's like a hospitality extended. Like, now it's extended to franchisees who are carrying on. I mean, it's got to be a little bit of a bug out, right? Like, you're going to walk into a Balance that you probably never been in. You probably didn't really walk the site. You can't walk the mall, right? But you walk in one, you're like, holy shit, this looks exactly like the one that we created. I mean, that's really cool.
That's for really, sure. Really I cool. am super hands-on, so I'm not there yet, but maybe one day.
All right.
Mark a success. Come back and just be like, Kyle, you were right, man.
Just not in the kitchen. You're just not going to be back in the kitchen.
You don't want me back in the kitchen. Nobody wants me there.
That's a question, though. Were you guys prepared? Did you have to tweak the menu at all for the franchise? Because I know, aside from the supply, maybe that question should have been first. But the menu stuff, did you do anything to it prior to the franchise decision?
Well, we had already been doing that prior to franchising. Just getting through COVID was a lot of, I mean, we didn't get hit with the labor thing like you were talking about earlier. We got hit hard with the supply chain thing.
Right.
So we already had to kind of slim things down, simplify SKUs. And then when we got into franchising, the first thing I did was work on supply chain. So minimizing SKUs is super important without affecting the customer experience at all. So we've done that. We've, you know, all of our menu is kind of like really clean food, and then it's got a unique sauce per menu item. So how we're going to make sauces still in the store without working with like a third party co-packer, because then you have to have a bunch of preservatives, inevitably your flavor changes. So we figured out how to do that, kind of centralize a bunch of SKUs, create one SKU, and then still make the sauces in the store, which I think is super important, because if not, it'd end up being like a Taco Bell or, you know, Chick-fil-A, where you just open up a sauce out of a container, and then the next thing you know, you're just another cheap shit brand.
Yeah, dude. I mean, sorry. I'll throw it out there. There's a very successful taco concept. Not Taco Bell, but they have multiple units, and they got a huge private equity investment, or even like they bought them out. It was a big mess, but they used to, at all their locations, used to have little glass jars of their sauces. And then private equity came in, they started to grow really quick, and everything came in little like ketchup packets, and the taste definitely changed. You know, like, things got smaller, everything got weird. And that's a maintain that consistency across that. I mean, is there any technology you think that's going to help with that, or that's still going to come down to
menu engineering?
What's that?
Menu engineering comes down to menu engineering, just like you said. I think that's one of the great things about what we do too, is it is really clean food, which means all the practices are super simple and we can pump them out on a really repetitive basis with minimal variety. There's always going to be some. I mean, human error exists, but ultimately what customers want is consistency, but they also want everything to be made in-house. They want it to be a real restaurant. That's not something, even if we're going to franchise, I'm going to compromise on. I'm not going to compromise on quality. So
that's the thing I think that I've seen with the most successful franchises. I mean, obviously you take McDonald's, but like even the more modern ones that I've worked with, that one feels like mine. Like, I don't know, even if I go to another one, this one still feels like mine. You know, I know it's a franchise, but this feels unique to my town. I think that's where they really nail it. I'm sure that's something you've put a lot of thought into.
Yeah, just making sure we have a good community connection. A big part of how we start and open is like local community connections, supporting nonprofits and good organizations doing good in a community when we come in. That way we know our neighbors and hopefully they accept us as one of theirs, and we support them and they support us, you know?
That's it. Well, very cool, man. I'm going to let you get back to work. You're like in the middle of lunch over there, but I have three questions for you. I don't think I hit you with these three questions last time. You probably know these questions now, so you might be prepared. That's a cheating, but all right. It's your day off. What restaurant am I going to find you at? Where are you going? Your day off, you're just gonna chill.
So embarrassed to say this. If I'm not cooking for myself, it's probably going to be Chipotle. I love Chipotle. No hate on them at
I'm with
all.
you.
It's so good.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Are you there like scoping out the operations or are you there eating? A little bit of
I
both.
do a little bit of both. I get my food. I might do a little recruiting. I don't know. We'll see what's up. Just take them some bubble teas and make their day. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, you happy
Yeah.
here? I hear you. All right, so you and I, let's say we're traveling, right? And we get lost, our phones die, and I think I might know the answer to this question already. What kind of restaurant am I going to find you in? Is it going to be like a fancy restaurant, a dive bar, a Chipotle? Like, where am I going to like? Where am I going to find Prakash? He's got to be somewhere around here. Where should I go to find you if we were lost?
You would probably find me in like a little Asian shop, mom and pop, just
Hell
like
yeah.
tucked in. And by the way, this question, we should totally do this. We should go travel and lose our phones and go find a really cool little Asian shop and
That's a
have
great
some really
idea.
unique food.
That's a great idea. I mean, yeah, let's do it. That could be a whole other piece of content, right? Like, where are they now without their phones? No one will know. We'll just be like full eating dumplings and having bubble tea somewhere. I'm down for
I'm
that.
all about it.
Okay, last one. One meal, three people. Who are the three people? Alive, dead, like you could be Mickey Mouse, it could be Superman. Three people, one meal, three people. Who are they and where are you eating?
Oh man. Honestly, I love the Sunday dinners I have with my parents at my house where I just cook something.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd change that, man. Past, present, future. I really value family. I really value sharing a meal. So I think I'd be with my family, my wife, my parents.
That's sweet.
If I can expand the three people, invite my wife's side of the family down, and I would cook something.
Oh, that's it. So you cook at home. You're just not cooking
Yeah.
anyone gonna buy.
I can't cook in a commercial setting. That's what I can't do. I mean, my kitchen is a complete disaster. Luckily, my wife cleans up after it, but there's like 17 pans stacked up in the
Yeah.
sink, and it's
Same
a wreck.
here.
It tastes great though. I mean, you
Yeah.
follow me on Instagram, so you see some of
Yeah.
my culinary
I see
escapades. They're
that.
not too bad.
But you,
You shot me a message on my birria.
you're creative. You're not going like, hey, I make these five things. You're experimenting with stuff. Like you're trying different
Yeah.
things.
I like to
Yeah, that's.
learn for sure.
Yeah.
My biggest thing recently has been exploring the connections between like Mexican and Indian food. There are a ton of them. A lot of the same spices, a lot of the same techniques, completely different outcomes. So just kind of
Yeah.
exploring that. It's really
No,
cool.
there's a place in the city here that does I forget the name of it, but they do crazy Indian tacos. Like
Really?
insane. I'm gonna find you the link, I'll send it to you. They do all the traditional Indian type stuff, but in like a puffy naan style taco, and they look outrageous. And then there's
You gotta send me that.
yeah, I'm gonna send it to you. So but yeah, that is a great idea. There's a lot of that, a lot of crossover between those two, like taco and Indian, and then there's tacos and barbecue I'm seeing a lot of. So
Yes.
tacos are great. I mean, can't go wrong. Prakash, thank you so much and congratulations on
For
everything. I
sure.
mean, you're a fucking beast. Hopefully you guys listen to what he's doing. I mean, I like I said in the beginning, I really appreciate your perspective on a lot of things because you're not a restaurant operator, even though you are a restaurant operator. That you brought from the outside what you used to do and how you're applying it to the business now. It's obviously making a difference. So congrats.
Sure, I appreciate you. I appreciate these opportunities and continue being a fan of your podcast. Thank you.
Awesome, man. I'm gonna have to give you a shout on the next one. Now I know that you're listening. All right,
I'll
man.
listen
Thanks so
for it.
much, Prakash.
Thanks, man. Yep.
All right. Let's see. Lee, stop this. Okay. Thanks for checking out another episode of the National Restaurant Owners Podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you are enjoying the show on a regular basis, please don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to the show. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more restaurant owners just like you. If you have any questions or suggestions for future episodes, I'd love to hear from you. You guys can hit me up over on Instagram @Kyle and Sarah, and I'd love to just chit chat. see what you guys think, which way we should take this show, some guests you might want to have, some things you want to talk about. Your feedback is essential to the progress of the show, so I appreciate everybody who reaches out. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you next time on the National Restaurant Owners Podcast.